Quaker.com. Today is Monday, March 19th, 2012, and this is podcast number 120. Well, first off, I ought to apologize for taking a week off from the podcast I didn't really take a week off. I took like 3 days off, so that's kind of like a week off. Well, technically it was 4 days off, because last Monday, I didn't really do a podcast. I compiled several articles, and then Tuesday I did a podcast, and then I didn't do a podcast Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. So technically I took 3 days off, but more technically I took 4 days off last week. But I needed it, because my brain was just wiped out with everything that's been going on around here. I hate to complain, but it's it's a lot more exhausting doing a podcast every single day than I would have ever thought possible. But anyway, so that's my apology and my excuses and everything. But I'm back, and here I am. So now, I wanted to give this a shot today. I'm working with absolutely no notes. This is just strictly off the top of my head. But I felt compelled to talk about this topic, because I think it's going to be important in the next 12 months or so. I've talked recently about what I called the Ron Paul bubble. We've had so much enthusiasm and so much effort in trying to get Ron Paul the Republican nomination, and so many people in the liberty movement are so excited about Ron Paul and the things that he's saying, and the very serious chance that he had, you know, assuming they were honest elections. When this election season began in 2011, Ron Paul had an honest chance if the elections would have been honest. But of course we know that the elections were anything but honest. State after state, pretty much every state that Ron Paul could have taken or should have taken, they cheated. They openly cheated. And this has been documented over and over, and there's all kinds of sources for this. So I don't feel the need to go through and pick it apart state by state and show all the evidence. There's plenty of that out there. But it's become hard to ignore that the GOP just blatantly cheated in every single state that Ron Paul had a real good shot in the entire early part of the 2012 election cycle. And so by the time we're where we are here in March, Ron Paul has been pretty much eliminated from any possibility. Now, I know that there are some weird ways to calculate the delegates that could show that Ron Paul has, at least he's going to have enough that when the convention rolls around that he can make some noise, unless the GOP continues cheating, in which case he may not have any delegates. I mean, they may just lock him out altogether like they did in 2008. Now, my purpose for bringing all that up is because there are so many people that have put so much of themselves, have poured so much of their energy and their lives and their money and all that they can do to support Ron Paul in this quest for the Republican nomination for president for 2012. And it's all going to come crashing down on them in the next 12 months. And so what we have here, unfortunately, is for some people, it is hero worship. Ron Paul's a hero for some people. For other people, it's varying degrees of high hopes and great anticipation of something good happening. And all of this is, unfortunately, it's based on faith in a system that is entirely fake and corrupt, and that is the electoral process. Now, in addition to that, I think I can make a fairly logical argument that any electoral process is immoral to begin with, because democracy is immoral. Hold on, we got a phone call here. Okay, sorry about that little phone interruption there. Hopefully I can pick this back up. I'm not sure exactly what I was talking about, but I have a rough idea. I think I was talking about so many people that are going to be, that are really just going to be crushed because, you know, this whole oh, I know what I was going to say. I was going to say that, and maybe I already said this, but I was going to say that I believe I can make a pretty solid argument that the entire democratic process is immoral and that voting in itself is immoral and the act of voting is immoral because what you're doing when you vote is you are participating in a system where a majority places its will and forces the minority into certain behavior. So for example, and I'm not going to make the whole podcast on voting, but I just want to make this point clear of where I stand on this. Because I've gone back and forth and I've really fought with this in my mind. I came to a difficult conclusion that I was wrong and that I had to accept this in order to be consistently moral. But the fact is that when 51% of people vote and they inflict their will on 49% of the people, and their will involves supporting a government that uses aggression to steal and then uses that money to commit even more aggression. When you have this as the process, the act of voting, whether you vote yes or no or vote for good guy or bad guy, it doesn't matter. To be a part of the process is an act of immorality. And let me just give an example of that. Let's say you have a person who's robbing a bank. And let's say the person has a crew of people who enable him to rob the bank. Now, only one guy actually goes into the bank and sticks the gun into the teller's face. But in the process, you have a guy that stands outside as a lookout. You have a guy who drives a car as the getaway car. And you have another guy who calls in a fake bomb call to the police to get all the cops in town to the other side of town. And all of those people are integral parts of the robber who's able to go in and actually stick the gun into the teller's face. Every single one of them is a part of that robbery, even though only one of them actually committed the act of violence of sticking the gun into the woman's face, into the teller's face. I shouldn't have assumed the teller would be a woman. There are lots of male tellers, but for the sake of this conversation, let's say the robber and the teller are female, just so that we can be politically correct here. It doesn't matter. The spotter on the outside who's watching, that person is guilty of the robbery. The getaway driver, guilty of the robbery. The guy who calls in the false bomb report to pull the police to the other side of town, knowingly, he knew he was a part of this process, he's guilty of the robbery as well. Now, there may be varying degrees of guilt. That's not the point. The point is, they're all involved in the robbery. And when you vote, no matter who you vote for, no matter what the circumstances, you are becoming a part of a process that forces whatever the voting minority or those who don't vote, by your actions of participating in the vote, you are part of the robbery. And by not voting, I'm still a victim of all of your all the other people's votes. But at least I'm not authorizing it by saying, yes, I'm still a part of this. Now, people will make the argument, well, if you don't vote, you don't have a right to complain. Well, that argument is very similar to the person who is being robbed. I'm going to take that in a different direction because I'm getting ready to go off on a rant on voting, and I really don't want to distract this podcast by going in that direction. I have a purpose for this podcast, and I really want to try to stick to my topic as much as possible. So I'm going to just abruptly shift gears here. I'll do a thing on voting, but right now let's stick with the topic that a lot of people who have just poured their heart and soul and poured their pocketbooks and just really, really put a lot of effort into getting Ron Paul elected are going to be horribly disappointed in the next 12 months. And that, In addition to that happening to those people, each day that goes by, more and more people who have put a lot of trust and a lot of faith in the United States government, due to largely the confusion between what is America and what is the government that controls the monopoly of aggression within the borders of the area referred to as the United States of America. There's a very, very clear distinction between the goons in Washington, D.C., and the various state capitals and the various city governments. There's a very clear distinction between those thieves in government and those of us who make up America and the American culture and the American people. We are entirely separate from the goons in government. And it's really difficult for a person to realize, if they've believed all their life, that America is all of us together, including the government. So that when the government goes and they send soldiers and invade some country, somehow we are doing this. And when the government goes and just mass murders thousands of people in some foreign country, we did this. When you can break out of that mentality and you begin to see that government on all levels is simply a gang of thieves, and we, the American people, are not them, the government. Those people in government are thieves, and they're not us. When this really begins to dawn on a person, they can take it in several directions. And one of the ways, mentally speaking, the way that it reacts in your mind, one of the ways is to have this sort of this illusion just crushed, this illusion of what is America. It at times, for some people, when they come to this realization that what they thought was America was not America, this can be a crushing blow. And it's very similar to what's happening and what's going to happen to a lot of the Ron Paul supporters when they realize all the efforts that they put in, it all was a waste if your only hope is to get Ron Paul elected. If your hope is to get the message out and to get more and more people understanding the libertarian message and the message of liberty and of freedom, if that's your goal, then great. Ron Paul has done a fantastic job, and this is all good. And even a loss in the election, that's fine. We still get the word out. We spread the word to far more people than we ever could have before. So if you keep that in mind, then this is all a wonderful thing of what's happened with Ron Paul. But if you're so wrapped up in winning this election that when you see that the whole election is a sham, everything is fake, it's all set up, it means nothing, all the effort went to nowhere because he's not going to get elected to anything. When the person sees that, and when that really comes home, it can be devastating. It can be just like the activity in the brain that goes on when a person realizes that the government is not America, that the government is just simply a gang of thugs, thieves, cowardice thieves who have other people do their thuggery for them because they're too afraid to actually stand up and do their own stealing. Anyway, so what I want to get at in this, and now that I've ranted for 10, 15 minutes, however long it's been, what I want to get at is that this can be very difficult to deal with when you have almost idolized a particular thing, whether we're talking about belief in the state, whether we're talking about belief in America and this confusion about what is America and what is the government of America. When a person comes to a point of realization, the disillusion that takes place can be devastating to an individual. And it's going to be the same thing when the Ron Paul bubble that I've talked about, when the Ron Paul bubble pops, it's going to be devastating in the same way to lots of people. Maybe millions of people will have to face this crushing reality that all of their hopes and their dreams and their aspirations are just nothing. It's just dust in the wind and it's gone. And it was all for naught. And when that hits a person, when you realize that you've spent your life believing one thing, and all of it, and all your hopes and dreams, and everything you believed, and everything you based on that, was false, it can be crushing to a person. It can cause all kinds of reactions: anger, frustration, fear. The variations of emotions that you can go through can be devastating. Now, I want to compare this to a very, very personal thing in my life, and I don't want to present this in a way to like make it sound like, oh, like I'm the victim, feel sorry for me. I don't want it like that at all, because I'm much better because of this. And I don't want to present it as, you know, I'm tattling on this person, so you know I win you over to my side, so that you can be on my side and be enemies with that guy because he's the bad guy. Well, I don't want that to be like that either. But I am going to be very specific about a very personal situation, and I want you to realize that what I'm describing is the same level of unrealistic belief. That when it's popped, it's a crushing blow. Now, what am I talking about? Well, all my life, my family tends to be the flag waving, military serving, right wing type, always doing their duty, that kind of thing. And my family has a history of that going back. There are a variety of military individuals in my family, including my brother and my brother-in-law, who, as I was being raised, they were both Marines, and there's a variety of other Marines in the family, and there are other military as well. As I was growing up, my older brother was in the Marines during Vietnam in the 60s. I have some of my youngest memories are of my brother-in-law actually being in Vietnam and my brother being here in the States, and we're worrying day to day whether or not that he would be shipped to Vietnam. Each day was just, is it today? Is it today? Is it today? And it didn't help any that every evening on the evening news would come on TV, and my dad always watched the evening news, and he always had everybody stop and be quiet and sit down and watch the news. If you were in the house, then you had to stop and sit down and watch the news with him. If you didn't want to stop everything and sit down and watch the news, then I'd get out of the house because he didn't want you disturbing him. So as a kid in the late 60s, with my brother-in-law in Vietnam and my brother day-to-day not knowing whether he was going to go or not, and we're sitting there watching the news, and they had a very odd thing that we don't see nowadays with the current military actions. They would tell body counts every week. They would update the body counts on the evening news. They would tell how many North Vietnamese that they estimated were killed. They would tell how many South Vietnamese they estimated were killed. And they'd tell how many American troops that were listed as killed and how many were listed as missing in action and how many were listed as POWs. And this, to hear this every week, they would update this number. It was terrifying as a kid, knowing that I've got my brother-in-law is over there and my brother is on the verge of going over there. It was very upsetting. Now, as it turned out, my brother ended up, through a series of circumstances, he ended up staying stateside as a Marine trainer, and he did a lot of other things. But what, and this is the purpose in bringing this up, the effect that this had on me, my brother was 12 years older than me. So at the time, you know, when I'm right in that vulnerable age group and he was right in the age group that many of his, schoolmates and so forth had gone over and were perhaps dead or whatever, right in that time frame, my brother, I put my brother on a pedestal at that time, and I made of him a hero. So I used to say back in those days, you know, some kids liked Spider-Man, some kids liked Superman, some kids liked Batman. Everybody had their heroes. I had a Marine. I had my brother. So as the years went by, I had already placed him on this pedestal, and I had already put him up to a position where he could not possibly achieve what I had. He couldn't achieve the position that I had created in my mind for him. But as the years went by, I continued to idolize him. He did some pretty amazing things. He was a very successful motorcycle racer, and I'll say even now he's one of the most natural motorcycle riders that I've ever been around. And I've been around I've been around the motorcycle culture most all my life, and I've been around motorcycle racing, not recently, but for years and years. I was right in the midst of all that, and I've hung out with a lot of bikers, and I've done a lot of riding. And my brother was maybe the most natural rider that I've ever been around. he could take years and not ride and then get on a bike, and it was like he was walking. It was that natural to him. So all of this added to this idolization that I had in this view of my brother. And as the years went by, and you know, he got older and I got older, and he went his way and I went my way, and he took on certain ideological positions, and I took on different ideological positions. And as the years went by, we attempted, both of us attempted, to remain friendly and communicating with each other, but we were so vastly different from each other that we had very little in common other than the fact that we were brothers and we had a connection through the family. Now, for years, he had a wonderful wife that she was just a wonderful person, and she did a lot of work to keep the family all in communication and keep us together. And at times my wife and my children, we had some really hard times, and my brother's wife was right there to lend us a helping hand and get us out of bad situations. She was just a wonderful person. And then, unfortunately, she ended up dying of breast cancer, and this left my brother on his own. And I should have picked up on a sign at that time, but I missed it, because here's the thing about a hero. When you have a hero, you tend to not see his warts. You tend to look over his flaws, and you tend to only see the aspects of that hero that support your idea of him being your hero. Now, this is the same thing that happens with a person who has accepted the idea that America, that the state, that the government is part of America. And so when they idolize this idea of America and they leave the government in that or as part of that, then they accept unrealistic and untrue things about the government that they believe. And so when it comes time to actually see what the government in America really is, it's pretty devastating, because it's so opposite of what they've believed. And this is the case in any hero worship like this. You when it finally comes home, of when you really see the hero's warts and you really see his shortcomings, then it can be devastating. And that's why I'm sharing this about my brother. As we got up, you know, like I said, he's 12 years older than me. So as I approached into midlife, up in the late 40s and around the age of 50 or so, and my brother at that time is getting close to 60 and then up over 60, by that time, he and I were really clashing on things, even though both of us were trying desperately to get along with each other. And I should have seen very obvious signs, but in my desire to continue the hero worship, I chose not to see some very obvious things. For example, blatant bigamy. This was after his wife had died, and then he remarried and married again while he was still married. And I should have seen this as the serious character flaw that it was, of having two wives with them not knowing. Now, it would be different in my view as a libertarian. If you want to have 14 wives, hey, it doesn't affect me. You know, I don't think the government should have a say in it. But from an honesty point of view, the wives should be in on it. They should know about that. If you're deceiving one wife and married to another, you're committing a very nasty act against those women for living this kind of deception. And I ignored that. I looked the other way. I pretended like it wasn't there, or I made excuses in my mind. And then odd things like he would come to my house for specific visits to accomplish specific tasks, but he wouldn't actually come to visit. I would go to his house just to visit and hang around and be friends, but he would not come to my house and do that. And when he would come to my house, he would come just in the front door, and he wouldn't sit down, and he wouldn't come in the rest of the house. And so I should have seen these things, and I should have spotted this behavior. And there were certain business transactions that I was involved with him in situations where I watched him do really questionable things. And I should have spotted that and recognized it. But I didn't. I made excuses in my mind, and I looked the other way. And then for a while, we were both employed by the same employer. And he was in a very influential position, and I was in a far less influential position. And I saw him doing things in that employment that were highly questionable to me. And yet I would still, even at that exaggerated situation where I could see that I should be rejecting his actions, and I still made excuses in my mind for him, and even made excuses to other people. Well, you know, it's because of this, or you don't realize what he's gone through, or whatever. And I would make these excuses. And it took years before I came to the point of where it dawned on me what he really was, and what kind of a person he really was. And when my eyes were opened, and I saw exactly what he was, it was crushing to me. It caused anger, uncontrollable anger in me, like I'm not sure I've ever experienced, because I had placed him in such a high position in my mind, such an unrealistic high position that no human could ever achieve, and yet I held him in that position. And when he fell from that position, the fall from that kind of a height was devastating to me. Now, the truth is, he didn't change. He didn't change from before the time that I realized really what he was to after. And so it was kind of a shock to him that I changed in the way I treated him. He was, you know, beside himself, like, what's wrong with Ben? Ben's gone nuts. Well, Ben, for the first time, saw what he's really like. And I realized in my mind, I don't want to be anywhere near this person. I don't want them near my family. I don't want to have anything to do with them, because this is not the kind of a person that I would associate with. And yet I had held him in that position of hero worship for so many years. So much psychic energy, so much of myself, so much of my soul was poured into loving him and worshiping him. And then I realized that it's just simple idolatry. I took a person and made a false idol out of them, something that they weren't even, that they could never really achieve. That's where I put them in my mind. And that was unfair to him, unrealistic, and unfair to me, and unfair to my family. And then the crushing blow of realizing all this, it was really devastating. It took a lot of sleepless nights realizing what a fool I had been in not being able to see him for what he really was over the years, and his, you know, his method of dealing with people and all these things. It was devastating. I'm going to break for a commercial. And when we come back, I'll pick back up on this, and we'll talk some more about how this relates to Ron Paul and the Ron Paul bubble, and how it relates to idolizing the state, and what we can do to help people get over this when it happens to them in the next 12 months. Stick with me through the commercial, folks. How would you like to support BadQuaker.com and get something nice for yourself at the same time? I want to tell you about Survival Gear Bags. It's run by my friend Kelly, who believes in and adheres to the non-aggression principle. Kelly's customers know him for his great customer service and his personal touch, because Kelly handles all customer service himself. The main focus of Survival Gear Bags is to allow you to build your own custom emergency kits with quality gear. Now, I know this because I bought my bug out bag from Survival Gear Bags over 2 years ago, and I've gone all over the country with it by my side. And you can rest assured that the prices will always be the best they can be at Survival Gear Bags. And if you use the link from badquaker.com, they'll probably throw in something for free for you with your order. Now, how do you do this? Well, it's simple. You go to badquaker.com. On the right side of the page, click on the picture of the backpack. Then look around at survival gear bags and find the stuff you want. You'll help badquaker.com and you'll support a merchant that's one of us. Now, I want to tell you about another way you can support badquaker.com and get something really cool at the same time. Shire Silver. Shire Silver is the proud seller of silver and gold trade cards. Shire Silver believes that silver and gold trade cards will show the world a better way to save, spend, and share precious metals. So what are silver and gold trade cards? They're specific weights of gold and silver laminated inside credit card-sized tradable cards. They're a handy and affordable way to trade precious metals. These cards received nationwide recognition when they were widely used as barter at the New Hampshire Porcupine Festival. You want a beer and a hot dog? Hand them a Shire Silver 5 card and get a Shire Silver 1 spot back as change. So again, what do you do? Well, you go to badquaker.com. On the right side, just below the backpack, you'll see the Shire Silver trade cards. Click on those cards and then check out Shire Silver's site. Be sure and watch Ron's video that's right there on the main page. And then swap some of those ridiculous Federal Reserve notes for something of real value. Something you can keep, trade, or give as the coolest gift ever. But be sure and use the link from badquaker.com. Thanks, folks. Thanks for sticking with me through the commercial. And be sure and get over to badquaker.com. And if you want to check out those the links to survival gear bags or to Shire Silver, be sure and get to badquaker.com and click on the links there. That way you're certain to get to the right site, and badquaker.com gets the credit for sending the click over. So anyway, and thanks to our sponsors for helping us on that. So let's get back to Ron Paul and to people who are disillusioned when they realize what the state really is. And that's really the purpose in this. I wasn't saying those things in order to take this opportunity in front of a microphone to slam my brother. As a matter of fact, I blame myself as much as I do my brother, because I should have, especially in the latter years as I've matured, I should have known better than to idolize anybody to that height. But this mistake is really easy to fall into, whether we're talking about idolizing, you know, the government and thinking that we're actually, and confusing it with America, or whether it's idolizing an individual person like Ron Paul, or a movement like the Ron Paul movement, and having much higher hopes for it than it can possibly ever realistically accomplish. It, you know, it doesn't really matter what you put into that position. Once you begin to have unrealistic ideas and unrealistic expectations, and then it suddenly comes home to you that these things can never happen, and that bubble pops, that hope, it vanishes, and you're left by yourself with nothing but a broken dream. It's really, really painful. And when friends are involved, and when friends at the same time are in the process of abandoning you because of the position you've taken, this can really be rough. And this happens a lot of times with people who realize the evils of the state. And when it really comes home to them, oftentimes friends and family will treat you like you're a nut, because they're still worshiping that thing. And when they see you break away and become the one odd man out that's not also involved in this worship of the state, or in this it's idolatry, whatever form of idolatry that you've gotten involved in. And I'm not saying that in order to put anybody down. I'm saying, you know, I'm pointing the finger at myself as well. These things creep onto us very slowly over time, and we don't realize till we're in the midst of it. And then when we do realize, that's when that bubble pops, and we are so disillusioned. And you know, oftentimes our friends and our family, they think, well, you know, he's lost it. He's gone over the edge, or whatever. Or he's crazy, or he's, you know, he's believing crazy stuff, or whatever. No. For the first time, I'm seeing what reality really is, and it's horribly painful. And that's what a person goes through when they finally see the state for what it is, or when they finally recognize how evil the American government is, or any other. This could work with the Australian government or the Egyptian government. I'm sure the people in Egypt went through a very similar thing not long ago. And then when they had all their high hopes in this revolution, and the revolution turns out to be the exact same thing. I'm sure they're going through the same process in their minds right now as they realize that once again they've been duped. And, you know, you feel like you don't ever want to fall for this again. And one of the traps you can go into is to say, well, fine, you know, I'll never believe in anything again. I'm just going to, you know, it's real easy to lose all hope. But what a person has to do, if you want to maintain your sanity, and if you want to not be that mean, grumpy old person that everybody doesn't, you know, that nobody wants to be around, if you want to avoid that, then what you have to realize is there's still good in the world, and there's still good in humanity, and there's still good in people around you and in people that you know. And even in those people who are still caught up in the idol worship, there's still good in them. It's just that we have to pull ourselves back and make sure of exactly what it is that we believe, what it is that we think. And it's not necessary to try to crush their hopes and their beliefs. It's just not necessary. It'll just cause you more pain. So it's a lot of times it's better just to, you know, kind of just allow yourself to mellow out a little, chill out a little bit. Take a break from certain activities if you need to, or, you know, if you really need to, sometimes a vacation can help. Another thing that can help is just doing something that you don't normally do. If you don't normally read, like novels, if you don't normally read a novel, pick up a novel, pick up a some kind of a book, and dig into it. If you don't really go in that direction, let's say you don't normally watch old movies. Well, go and get an old movie that you've never seen before and watch it. Do something to break the pattern of your mind so that you don't just dwell on this thing that has caused your bubble to pop, your world to crush down upon you. If you're okay, but you're seeing other people who have gone through this disillusionment, do everything you can to try to support those people and bring them back into seeing life like it really is. Because even with the understanding that the government is evil, and even with the understanding that Ron Paul can't change the government, and even with the understanding that Ron Paul is not going to get elected, and even with the understanding that all the effort and all the work and everything is never going to get Ron Paul as the head of the GOP or as the nominee for the presidential run or as president itself, all of that effort is not wasted. There's still a lot of good accomplished with all that. It's just that it was an unrealistic goal to begin with. And so if you bring your sights back down and really realize what it is that we can accomplish, and realize that Ron Paul has already accomplished a tremendous amount, we already have a victory, then we can begin to look at it a lot more realistically. And we don't have to try to get into government and use the aggression and the immorality of government to try to fix the aggression and the immorality of government. If you realize that that was not a realistic plan to begin with, and that a better plan was just to try to get people to see, if we can just see the cage, if we can just see the chains, then the more people that can see that what this system really is, we don't have to get control of the government. We don't have to get anybody elected president. As a matter of fact, in the long run, those are really counterproductive goals. I've said this before about Ron Paul, and I'm going to have to keep repeating it for the next few months. Think of, and my regular listeners have heard this before, so hopefully I won't bore you with this analogy, but think of Ron Paul for a moment. think of everything that he said about what he could do in government and what he could do if he were president and what he would do. And you think about the things that he's talked about, like cutting spending and bringing the military home and cutting these different departments, these horribly wasteful departments in government, and bringing the office of the presidency back into control so that it's a constitutional office, and all the things that he's talked about and all the things that he's said, and auditing the Fed and all these other wonderful things that he's talked about. Well, let's just pretend for a moment that the elections were real. Let's pretend that the GOP doesn't cheat. Let's pretend that Ron Paul could actually have a shot at getting the nomination as the Republican candidate for president. And let's assume for a moment that the Democrats don't cheat and that the election process as a whole is all legitimate and everybody plays fair, the fantasy world that is. But let's just imagine that for a moment. And let's imagine a world where Ron Paul could actually get elected as president. And let's imagine that he was able to get the cooperation he needed in government, and he was able to do all those wonderful things that he talks about and all those wonderful things that people want him to do. What would he actually accomplish in all this? Well, here's what would happen. He would cause the United States government to suddenly become very efficient at what it does. He would bring spending levels and all the out-of-control aspects of government, he would bring them into control, and he would cause government to function and work far more efficiently than it does now. But what have you accomplished when you've done that? Well, I've compared it before to a situation where a thief is in the process of robbing you. And the thief doesn't really know what it is that he's doing. He's got a pistol, and he doesn't really know how to handle that pistol. He's pretty much, he's not good at all at what he does. And he draws his pistol, and he's got the drop on you, and he's holding you there at gunpoint, and he's demanding your money. And when you don't react quick enough for him, he pulls the trigger, except his pistol jams. Probably because he didn't know how to load it correctly to begin with. So you say, here, let me help you with that. So you take the pistol from him, and you clear the jam, you correctly set it up, and you hand it back to him, and you say, please, continue your robbery, kind sir. When we take someone like Ron Paul and we put them into a position like the presidency, you have now created a scenario where the government can suddenly become far more efficient at what it does. And what does it do? What is it that you want the government to do? Do you really believe this idea that the government is just this wonderful thing that's just here as a benevolent overseer to help and to represent us? And to, you really believe all that? Or isn't it true that the government is a gang of thieves at large? Isn't it true that the only thing that the government can do is steal from some people to give to other people who did nothing for it? Isn't the government itself simply a way to redistribute wealth out of the hands of people who work and earn their living and into the hands of people who don't? Isn't that all that government really does? And isn't it true that everything else that government does is just an excuse to get to do that one thing? Steal from some to give to others? Then why in the world would you possibly want somebody to go in and take control of government and make it work? Why would you want to take the pistol away from the robber, fix the pistol, and hand it back to him? Why would you want to give the robber a lesson in how to use the pistol when you know he's going to use it on you? Why would you do that? And yet, that's the concept of electing Ron Paul, or anyone like Ron Paul, into a position of power. You're taking a dumb, ineffective government. What did Thoreau say about government? Well, he called it the state, but Thoreau was confused. He didn't know the difference between the state and the government. We know this. But what did Thoreau say about the government? Didn't he call it, I can't remember the terminology, if he called it an idiot, or if he said that it was stupid. One way or the other, Thoreau essentially said that, you know, that the government is dumb. And it is. The government is both You know, it's kind of almost like the cartoonish versions of evil guys that we see, like in the, you know, in some of the, like Austin Powers or whatever, where the bad guy is, in a way, a genius and yet an idiot at the same time. Well, that's the way government is. I've talked also about corporations, and this is how corporations behave, because the process that brings certain people to the heads of government is the same as the process that brings people to the heads of corporations. And it produces some of the, it rewards some of the worst people in society with the highest levels of position in government and in industry. Sorry about the phone interruptions and all the other interruptions. This is what we get when I decide to record these ahead of time during the day instead of recording them in the middle of the morning or the middle of the night or whatever. So anyway, what was I talking about? Oh yeah, that government and industries, corporations and all these things tend to reward, there's a whole system, I've talked about this before, that drives the worst, the dregs of society, that drives them into positions of leadership in corporations and in government. And so this tends to create a situation where government is both ingeniously evil and unbelievably stupid at the same time. And so when you bring somebody like Ron Paul into government and you essentially teach it how to run its books, then you've created a scenario where that government can then perpetuate itself for maybe not indefinitely, of course not indefinitely. Eventually, its own stupidity will overwhelm it, and eventually the people being robbed will not be able to support the unbelievable numbers doing the robbing. And at some point, this upside-down pyramid has to collapse on itself. But the difference is, are we going to just sit back and watch this hideous monster fall on its own weight? Or are we going to give it, essentially put it on an exercise program, get it back into shape and get it all healthy so that it can beat us more and live longer before it eventually collapses and falls? And that's what Ron Paul or anybody like that in government does. They give it a shot in the arm and they bring it back to health so that it can oppress us longer. This is the opposite of what we should want. Now, that wasn't really the direction I wanted to take all this, but I did want to throw that out. But, you know, really, what I really wanted to talk about and what I really wanted to emphasize, and the reason that I brought this to a personal level with me and why I told the story of my brother, was that I really want to reach out to everybody possible in the liberty movement and get these people, all of us, to reach out to our fellows in the liberty movement that are getting ready to be completely disillusioned with what takes place in the next 12 months. And also for those of us who are new to the liberty movement, who maybe have been somewhat, you know, in the liberty movement to one extent or another, but now are starting to open their eyes and really see what the state is like, and to really come to grips with how evil the state is and how the government can do absolutely nothing good, and anything that it seems like it's doing good is just an illusion for the purpose of stealing more from somebody else. As people begin, as this begins to dawn on them and they begin to see it and they begin to recognize it, this is a tremendous burden on the mind, and it can be crushing to a person if they don't have the support, and that's what all of us need to do. Now, I'm saying this, even though I'm not the best at holding up my brothers, at holding up my sisters, at holding up people and saying, you know, hang in there, let's make this together. I'm really not good at that. I'm just kind of, you know, when I see somebody else in misery, I think in my mind, I have sympathy in my mind, but I'm horrible with words. I don't know what to say to help them. There are lots of people who are much better at that than me. I have a tendency to say stupid things like, you know, well, you know, toughen up, what's wrong with you? or some other stupid thing that just doesn't help the situation any. So a bit hypocritical on my part, perhaps. But I see the need for all of us to reach out to our fellow liberty lovers and support each other and help each other. I don't necessarily know on an individual basis how to do that, but I know that all of us need to do it, because not only because so many people right now are having that illusion of good government popped, and that idea that good government could actually exist, they're having that illusion just blown away, and they're looking into the abyss and realizing how evil and how dark this thing really is. And the idea that they've supported it for so long and they've got so much faith that was invested in that thing, and now to have it all thrown away. And the same effect that happens with the Ron Paul movement as this whole thing unfolds in the next 12 months. You know, all of us together, we really need to look around us and do everything we can to hold up our brothers and sisters and help them make it through these trying times like this. Because it is going to be, you know, it is going to be rough, especially for the Ron Paul people. In the next 12 months, watching the campaign fall apart, watching the media, you know, we've gotten used to people complain for so long that the media ignored Ron Paul. And then all of a sudden they started to notice him. But now they're going to put a lot of emphasis on how Ron Paul is, how his campaign is collapsing and how his funding is drying up, and how you're going to see this all in headlines in the next few months. They're going to portray it far, you know, worse than it really is. Ron Paul's support is still probably as strong as it ever was, and 6 months from now it'll probably be just as strong. That's not to say as many people will be giving money. A lot of people are going to back off on the money that they're giving because they're going to see that it's a not a winnable battle. But then again, we need to realize that, you know, anybody that can afford that money, there are so many good organizations that can go to, the Ludwig von Mises Institute, or, you know, there's a variety of places that this money, you don't, just because Ron Paul's campaign is not on top of things doesn't mean that you can't help and that you can't further the cause of liberty by supporting these organizations. And as an example, you don't even have to support them through direct donations. I just recently went over to the Ludwig von Mises Institute and bought a Rothbard a silver coin, because A, I want a Rothbard silver coin, but B, by doing so, it supports the Ludwig von Mises Institute. And I bought a bunch of books while I was over there. So not only am I supporting the movement in doing that, but I'm also providing myself more information and more ammunition so that I can refine my own position and better educate myself, so that in the months ahead I can do everything that I can do to try to, you know, further our cause and do so in a more accurate way, in a more efficient way. So there's ways of still remaining active and not abandoning the battle and not abandoning the fight. We can still do these things even as the Ron Paul campaign falls away. That doesn't mean that this cause of liberty is lost. Just because Ron Paul is not president doesn't mean we lose, or doesn't mean we have lost. The Ron Paul presidency itself, this third time try at the Ron Paul presidency, the first in 88, the second in 2008, and now this one, have accomplished a tremendous amount. And we, all of us together, need to not let our minds be distracted by the loss of not getting the presidency. We need to focus on the victory that has taken place in getting the message out and letting so many people on the left see that the liberty message is the peace message, is the message of individual liberty and rights, and allowing people on the right to see that really and truly the conservative argument is nothing but a cheap tin horn. It's not real. That real liberty and real individual rights come through the liberty, through the concepts of individual property ownership and the zero aggression principle. As people on the right and people on the left begin to see the consistency of the liberty message, We have drawn them out of both of those two delusions. And that's where the victory lies. Not in whether or not the Ron Paul campaign can take this state or that state, or whether or not he gets the Republican nomination. That's not victory. That's the opposite of victory. We don't. Why would we possibly want their approval, or why would we want to join their club? They're our enemies. We shouldn't want, nobody, Ron Paul or anyone else, should want to be president. In my opinion, back to what I started to go off on earlier, in my opinion, the act of being president is an immoral act. I don't believe a person can be president and behave morally. Any act that a person commits as president is an act of aggression. It's based upon, it's financed through theft, and it's based upon coercion in any form. Anything that the president does, even to close down programs, anything that the president does is done based on his ability to aggress upon others and based on the financing that comes to him through taxation, which is robbery. So we shouldn't, none of us should aspire to be president. None of us should aspire to support anyone else for president, because the very act of doing so is a violation of the zero aggression principle. So as we take our hopes and our dreams and our visions of the future and take those out of this silly Ron Paul bubble, and we bring it back to reality, and we see all the good that has been done by this Ron Paul campaign, and we can draw that into the true movement of liberty and get people's minds to focus not on us just winning, our team winning, yay for us. It's not some NASCAR event. It's not some football game. This is teaching individual people the concepts of liberty so that they themselves can stand up for themselves. Not so that a collective somewhere can all decide together that we're going to force liberty down the throats of other people. That's not liberty. You can't do that. You can't say, okay, we're going to make everybody free, and if they don't like it, you know, we're going to force it on them. That's the opposite of logic. That doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And yet that's what it would be if we could get a majority of votes, and if we could do all the fantasy stuff of getting a libertarian in charge of government. The very act would be the opposite of libertarianism. So, without going back on that rant again, I'll cut it a little bit short and just say that the whole purpose of this podcast today was to, hopefully I got this across, was to encourage each and every listener to, first off, to not allow yourself to be completely disillusioned when that which you've invested so much in turns out to be false or turns out to be a failure. Don't let it drag you down. Pull yourself back up. Focus your mind on something. Take a break if you need to. Like I was talking about, you know, just watch some movies, take a vacation, go fishing, do something to break your mind out of that routine and out of that the sump that comes in whenever you see all your hopes and dreams burst like that. Do something to get your mind out of that. Do something unusual that you don't normally do. And then get yourself back on your feet. And realize that we still are winning this fight. The state is still gonna die. The U.S. government and all other governments at some point will grow to the point where they fail, and there will be more government and more and piled upon itself until the state eventually consumes of as much of its host as it can. And when the host can no longer support the parasite will die. It's going to take a lot of the host with it. But there's going to be those of us who know, and we are going to be the remnant, and we will survive this, and we will create a world of tomorrow. So thanks once again, folks, for listening to BadQuaker.com. Be sure and get over to the website and click on the buttons there for our sponsors so they know you're listening and so that they know you're there. And tell your friends that for more on liberty, the zero aggression principle, and property rights, go to badquaker.com. Thank you very much, folks. Thank you.